Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast for today. We've been talking with David Finessy about the daily life of what the city and village cultural life would be like in the days of Jesus, in the time of the Second Temple. And he has been opening our eyes to some things that we just had really no clue, but they've been proven by the archaeological digs. He's been sharing these things with us in order to give us a clearer understanding of what daily life was like as you go reading through the scriptures. Let's jump right back into this interview with David Finessy. Child, you know.
Sure, I would do that. Yeah, the Syrophoenician woman, and Jesus makes a trip up to Tyre and Sidon. And then you have the man from Cana. He's in Capernaum, but he sends his servants to Cana, mm-hmm. where Jesus is, yeah. begs him, come heal my son. He's got a fever, yep. which was probably malaria. Mm. He's got a fever. Malaria is deadly in children, and it's deadly in pregnant women. And I spend a part of a chapter talking about malaria in ancient Palestine. It's the archaeological evidence is clear. These people were scared to death of malaria. It's a killer. And so he sends for Jesus, please come heal my son. And it's too late. But Jesus comes anyway. And anyway, so you do whatever you have to for your children. And imagine the panic, the terror. You see other children getting sick and dying. Now your child is sick. Mm-hmm. What can I do?
Yeah,
amen. So that's the way I picture these folk. They're panicked all the time. Now, in one chapter, I talk about mortality rates, right? This is not a very optimistic chapter. Whenever I lecture on this, you really depress me. But 4 out of 10 children died before age 19.
Wow.
It was not safe to be a child.
Yeah.
And Israel's not. They don't have a worse mortality rate than Greece and Rome. It's a little bit less. It's a little bit lower rate. So in Greece and Rome, it'd be like, 45 out of 100, even 50 out of 100, whereas in Israel, it's 40 out of 100. So it's a little bit safer, but not by much. It's just it's a rough time. So that's what I mean by grittier. I want to give a more realistic picture. And there will be people, I hope, read the book that will see connections and conclusions that I don't even yet see. They'll use it in creative ways that I haven't even thought of using. But I'm trying to get this information out so interpreters and exegetes can access it and use it in their own creative ways to understand, to write books on the ministry of Jesus, to preach on these texts, and so forth. So it's a resource, and I hope it will stimulate further thinking and writing on the topic. And so I think and I hope it's a different spin than the sort of happy, optimistic, pleasant spin I get in some of the others. I don't want to criticize too much because I've learned a lot from these other books on the daily. I've learned a ton. These are great people. And they're great historians, but I think
you're giving a different perspective on it.
Amen. Yeah, I think it's not as pleasant and sunny as sometimes it's presented.
Right. I love studying about the daily life of people in history. And it sounds like your book is especially relevant because it puts some of the biblical stories, as we just briefly discussed, into context. And I believe the biblical writers, they weren't writing things down to inform and influence a 21st century American audience or anyone else that would be born today either.
That's right.
They were writing to the people of their own culture. I believe that. And therefore, they did not have to explain certain terms or the settings because everyone was living that culture. Take, for example, the Last Supper and the term reclining at the table. That doesn't mean they just finished their big feast at the picnic table and we're all lounging around in lawn chairs like we do at picnics today. It talks about how, they traditionally did not use tables and chairs like we do in the West. Anyway, I love what you're doing with this book. I mean, it sounds intriguing. Let me ask you this. Were there any surprises that you found as you're doing your research that would totally transform what we think or what you thought ancient Israel was like? Anything that would destroy some type of false teachings going on today as what as we just talked about what the biblical writers were trying to communicate, you know, where Bible scholars have basically been teaching us the wrong things?
Well, that's a great question. I hadn't thought of that one. I'd have to... Nothing comes to mind immediately, you know, that I destroyed in this book a false teaching or anything. It's possible that would come to mind if I gave it some thought.
I'm talking about as far as, like, customs and traditions that from ancient Israel that are being taught wrong today. I'll just use the example, you know, the picture of the Last Supper, you know, showed them all at the table, you know, basically sitting in chairs. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm trying to think, you know, what would be most relevant here. In one chapter, I go through the family life and I detail the views of girls compared to the views of boys. You know, this cultural trait I bring out in my novel, As Far As You Can. This is one of the things I deal with in the novel. The folk valued sons a lot more than they did daughters. As a father of two daughters, I find that really troublesome. And the debate is, to what extent did they carry that out? Was there child exposure? In other words, if they had an unwanted child, would they take it out and leave it alongside the road, which was a common Greek and Roman practice? The literature says absolutely not. They would never do it. But then some of the historians, they're waffling on that. They say, well, you can see it. They say they don't, but then they talk about the foundling child. Well, that's an exposed child. Foundling means I found the kid on the road and I'm raising him.
Yeah.
So they're saying there was child exposure, mostly the girls. You know, they didn't want girls, they wanted boys. And some are even suggested they didn't give the girls as much food to eat as they did the boys, if their food was somewhat challenged. And they would be more apt to, you know, they would sometimes sell their children. A poor family has to get their resources where they can, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the resources, if you're a poor family, are your kids. And so you think, well, I'm in debt. I can sell this child to so-and-so for 50 denarii and pay off my debts. And they would sell their kids, but they would sell the girls first before they had to sell the boy. That's troublesome. And that's what I mean by a grittier, you know, some of the things I write, as I write, my stomach churns and I just feel really sad.
Yeah.
And yet this is history. So here you have Jesus going into the house of this guy named Jairus, his girl who's 12.
Yeah.
When you're 12, you're getting ready. You're going to be betrothed, right? And they get the girls out of the house quickly. Can't. So they come, Jairus sends for Jesus, and she's evidently already died. He comes into the room, and people are wailing and weeping. He sends them out, and he heals her. So here's Jairus. He cared, you know, about it. I'm not saying that nobody loved their daughter. That would
be
human nature. I'm just saying there are these indications that kind of make me really troubled about the devaluation of girls. Mm. So that was a troubling thing. So that makes you more alert in the New Testament for women who pop up in Jesus' ministry, and even later in Paul's letters, and for little girls like Jairus' daughter and so forth. Mm. It makes you more alert to that kind of thing.
Yeah, amen. Let's go over a few of the chapters. Just give us some little tidbit. I'll ask a question about some different chapters, and just they'll let us get a deeper perspective on some of the more common things that we may take for granted. Not so much take for granted, but something that maybe we don't understand at all from our Western point of view, like the city life. What was that like in the days of Jesus?
Well, as today, probably, you had the upper, most of the aristocrats live in the city. They seldom live in the country. They own huge estates in the country, but they don't want to live there. They have estate managers that run it for them, and they live in the city. So you've got more aristocrats in the city than you do anywhere else. But the city also had an urban, you know, class of poor people, very poor people. So you have the aristocrats, you have the working class, craft persons, the small merchants, and then you have the poor that are just basically homeless. We encountered them in the gospel, you know, beggars and so forth that are stationed by the temple. We see these in the book of Acts and so forth. So if you wanted a good idea what the cities are like, you might go to India, like New Delhi or somewhere like that in India. Yeah. Go into the ghettos, like some of those movies. They made a movie about a kid from a ghetto. Mm-hmm. And you get an idea of what these cities were like. They were not. They were filthy. The smell, they say the smell hits you about, depending on the size of the city, in the case of Rome, for example, about 5 miles away, the smell would just knock you down.
Wow.
It was not like a pig barn. So the smell is overwhelming. It's, yeah. The streets are absolutely filthy with all kinds of animal and human waste, rotting corpses. And you have to think Jerusalem was not any different. Now, Jerusalem is a big city for the ancient world. It had between 60,000 and 100,000 people, which is very large.
Yeah.
It was like one of the leading cities of the East. So it's a huge. Other cities would have been Caesarea on the seacoast. It was the capital. It was newer. I got to think it was a little cleaner. The Jewish population there was a minority. And we think the city there had only about 15,000 persons. You sort of have to translate those into modern. So a city of 15,000 would be like in our day and age, a city of maybe 150,000.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Jerusalem would be like a city of about a million.
Right.
In our day and age, would be comparable to that in their thinking. Up in Galilee, you have the two main cities of Tiberias and Sepphoris, each about 10,000 people. Again, not extremely large, but comparable to a small city in our culture. So the aristocrats cluster in the cities. They live in expensive houses. They will often have a country residence, much like you find in the British television series Downton Abbey, where they have the big country residence and they have a house in London.
Yeah,
that's the way the wealthy have lived for centuries from the Greco-Roman age, you know, through today. But then you had in the more modest part of Jerusalem, you had the working class, the craft persons, and these come. We get information from them from their tombs. They would scratch on the side of their bone box. We call it an ossuary. What they did. So there's a guy, you know, who worked on the temple. The temple was being continuously made, constructed until like 4 years before the Jewish war. It was destroyed.
Yeah.
It was destroyed 8 years after that. So it was only finished then. It employed thousands of workers. So this guy was working on a temple. So he was a craft person. And they looked at his bones, and you know, his thigh bones were really thick, like he did a lot of squatting in his work. They find references to people like that too. Some of them are potters. There's a guy who's a potter. So these are crafters. I call them working class.
Right, right.
And there are the poor. There are no remnants of the poor. They don't have a tomb. They couldn't afford a tomb. Their bodies are just thrown into the common grave, right?
Yeah.
That's mentioned in the Gospel of Matthew.
Right. Yeah.
The field of blood. They had no houses. They probably slept in the streets. They might have had a little shack with some sticks and so forth, which wouldn't have survived. And they live on the outskirts of the city.
Yeah.
And they come in to beg. And they will lie around the temple area. Somebody might bring them in. I recall one Sunday, I was in Jerusalem, and I went to church over at the so-called Garden Tomb, the Anglican church service. And on the way back, I passed by the Damascus Gate. It was early Sunday morning. They have church really early over there at the Garden Tomb. So I was coming back, and I passed the Damascus Gate. And I saw two men carrying a lady, and they put down a little rug there right by the gate, and they put her on the rug, and they put a bowl down beside. She was she could not walk, and her hands were such that she couldn't use her hands at all. And they put the bowl down, and then she began her little begging sort of dirge. And as the folk would pass by, they put a couple of coins in her bowl. That's the way I imagine these people were.
Yeah.
They were helped to get to the temple gates, you know, like we find in Acts chapter 3 and so forth. They were, somebody would bring them in, people that were just completely incapacitated. You can't work if you're like that. There's no thinking. So they beg.
So
the cities were like that. They had about, you know, they housed the 1%, I call them the aristocrats. They housed the majority, the working class. And then they housed the, well, they didn't house. They had the beggars, the people that were so diseased, so crippled, whatever, that they just had to beg for a living.
Yeah,
all these people.
I mean, there's something that most people don't talk about, but in the city, where do they go to the bathroom, the restroom? Did everyone use public outhouses? Or, you know, I mean, you're talking 100,000 people. That's a lot of waste.
Yeah. They do write about it now. Like I say, we're in a new era where people want to know about what daily life was really like. I remember when I was in high school, I took Latin, and we had these Latin textbooks, and they would have these pictures of clean people living in really nice houses with columns and things.
Right.
Wearing white togas. Mm-hmm. None of this is realistic unless you were in the upper 1%. Well, obviously, most people wouldn't be that way. They go to the bathroom in the street. They might have a little pocket. If they had an apartment, let's say they had a little house, a one-room house, they would have a chamber pot. And then they just take it out and throw it in the street. That's why the streets are filthy. That's why the city stinks so badly.
Yeah.
And after they have eaten their meal, they have a few bones maybe, they just throw them out in the street. Everything goes in the street.
Wow. And that, I mean, the flies must have been just horrendous then, if all that excrement's out in the street.
The flies were horrendous. Yeah. Not only the flies, but one of my chapters has to do with diseases. And I say one of the diseases I discuss is going to be malaria.
Yeah.
But the other disease I'm discussing, I was unaware of until I started reading these archaeological reports. As I say, the emphasis now is on the ordinary person. So they are taking those manure piles and examining them microscopically for pathology, and they're finding huge amounts of parasites, intestinal parasites, in other words, worms, like round worm, whipworm. And so then they start extrapolating, well, if there are that many, you've got to say a good chunk, if not most people, are infected with these intestinal parasites. Now, what can that do to your body? Well, the parasites siphon off the nutrition that you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So it can make you at least weak and lethargic. At most, it will make you totally emaciated.
Yeah.
You look, you know, anorexic. So at one point, I talk about people bringing their little children for Jesus to bless them. And I say, you have to think about at least a third of these kids probably are infected because they live among the squalor.
Yeah,
it's just on the streets. And they didn't often cook their meat very thoroughly. Sometimes they even ate their meat raw. You're just a prime candidate to be infected.
Yeah.
And so you got to think that 30% of these little kids are emaciated and anemic. That have come. So, you know, when we picture it, when it's somebody paints a picture of the Jesus blessing the children, the kids are happy, they're healthy looking, climbing all over. Think more of emaciated children and anemic and feverish children that they've asked to be blessed. That's a more accurate picture.
Right. Well, David, for someone who isn't able to stay and listen through the entire interview, can you give us your contact information, and that way they can get a hold of you and check out your website and all that good stuff? If someone wanted to ask you a question or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Very easy. I'd be glad to take emails. So my email address is simply D, F as in Frank, I-E-N, S as in Sam, Y, at gmail.com. So D-F-I-E-N-S-Y at gmail.com. Feel free to email me. You can go to my website. It's simply David, F-I-E-N-S-Y, .com.
All right. And you also have a LinkedIn page, too, correct?
I have a LinkedIn page. You can find me there. You can find me at, I have an Amazon page.
Yep. And we'll be putting links, all this, in the show notes down below, because I want to make sure that people can get in touch with you if they have a question or something like that. And stay in touch with you as far as the publication of the book and things like that. Hey, everyone. Pastor Bob here. We are all out of time again for today's episode with our interview with David Finasy. I don't know about you, but my eyes are being opened to things that I have no clue was really taking place back in those days. You had tidbits of ideas, but he has just been sharing the understanding, scientifically proven from archaeological digs and analysis of bones and remains and... This was not an era that was conducive to easy living. It was a hard, hard life, which is one of the reasons why mortality rates were so high. But more importantly, the purpose in asking David come on and share these things with us is because I wanted you to have a clearer understanding of the scriptures and understanding that as you're reading the Bible, you can, in your mind, put it into context. Is like he was talking about the little children that were trying to get to Jesus and the disciples were trying to shoo them away. And Jesus told them, no, let the kids come to me, right? And he said these would be not the little plump, kids having fun, all smiles and giggles and everybody smiling and having a good time. These were emancipated kids. These kids were dying. I mean, they were hungry. They were filthy. They were living in rags if they had clothes at all. This is the type of thing that you don't see in pictures. This is the type of living situation that Bible teachers don't talk about. One, they probably don't know, but two, it's not something that preaches well from the pulpit, is it? Well, David is opening our eyes to all these things, and like I said, I'm praying that you're getting as much out of this as I am. That as you're going through the study of your own scriptures, your own Bible study time, that you're going to get a clearer understanding of the setting in which the scriptures you're reading was really written to. They were not written to 21st century people living in air conditioning and high rises. They were written by this Bible scholars to the village people of that era, the peasants of that era. Now come back tomorrow. We're going to continue our interview with David Finasy. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this, your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. J Join the FaithCasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. FaithCasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a FaithCaster. FaithCasters, your voice, your platform, your success.